Chapter 4, May 1817. One peculiarity, it might have been called an eccentricity had he had any control over it, of John Segundus was that he often had strangely lingering dreams. Whether this was due to him being a magician, or merely due to him being John Segundus, he was unsure. Although it would be a fascinating topic for study, there were, after all, several stories and sayings about the dreams of magicians, it felt such a personal subject that he was reluctant to ask around his colleagues in the York Society to ascertain their own experiences. The precise content of these dreams, while vivid in the dream itself, was not always clear to him upon waking, but he would spend the rest of the day caught in whatever mood the dream had held, an aftertaste of emotion lingering at the back of his tongue. The dreams were occasionally happy and left him in buoyant spirits for the rest of the day. Sometimes nightmares left their claws hooked in his skin and kept his nerves on edge in the waking world. Rarely, but often memorably, they would be the kind of dream from which he woke flushed and breathless, and would leave a trace of themselves as a strange kind of restless energy in his blood. Last night, the dream had not been a happy one. Occasionally, he was left with faint images or sounds in his memory, but not this morning. All that remained of his dream was a discomfort, his clothes ill-fitting, his neckcloth too tight, and a feeling of gloom which was completely at odds with the bright spring sunshine spilling in through the windows. He had not slept well, waking several times throughout the night, slipping always back into the same dream until he jolted awake once more. It was in this attitude, unjustifiably morose and rubbing at his tired eyes, that he made his way down to breakfast. The sight that met him was more cheering, although that little cheer was quickly overpowered by embarrassment at having been beaten to breakfast by a guest. Then again, he thought to himself, guest no longer seemed quite the correct word for the man sat before him, reading a newspaper and eating buttered toast. "Good morning, Mr. Childermas," exclaimed Segundus, an attempt to present himself as better company than he felt. "I am sorry to keep you waiting. I did not mean to sleep so late."
"Good morning, sir," Childermas replied, looking up from his newspaper. "No need to apologize. A man may rise whenever he likes in his own home. I've been here only a few minutes myself. It was a late return for us all last night."
"Yes," Segundus sighed. "I cannot complain at the popularity of the society when it stimulates such interesting conversation, but when all rooms are booked by visitors, it is rather inconvenient." His neck still ached from the odd angle at which he had dozed in the coach back to Staircross, and he stretched it now with much relief. After a cup of tea and some bread and cold meat, however, Segundus felt a bit more like himself. His dreams had faded and had left him with only some fleeting images he could not quite grasp hold of when he tried, and a general feeling of unease. Shaking his head a little to clear it of such fancies, Segundus fell into conversation with Childermas, and soon found his indistinct worries blown away. Vinculus had apparently already breakfasted and was out in the spring sunshine, having previously found a sheltered spot in the garden that long kept the sun. Childermas read aloud some choice articles from his newspaper, laughing at some of the more ludicrous stories. A gentleman in London who had managed to transform an ornament of his wife's into a living version of itself, and had then had to involve the entire household in apprehending the incredibly angry and vicious goose, and frowning at some others, and taking up his memorandum book to write in.
"It seems I must leave you today, sir," Childermas said, scowling at the paper. "I had best see to this attempted summoning of the Raven King in Sheffield on Thursday."
"Ah," thought Segundus, "there is the bad news." He was surprised at his own disappointment at Childermas's words, but was glad that his ominous, if vague, presentiments had not come to anything worse. Childermas had only been at Staircross 3 nights, but Segundus had grown quite used to his company. On waking, he looked forward to these conversations at breakfast, to their discussions about the school and possible curricula, to their work on Vinculus, to their experiments with various spells. "Oh dear," he said, pouring another cup of tea to hide his disappointment. "That certainly seems ill-advised."
"I do not think they can have been advised at all. They have no idea of the difficulties involved in such a task. There is only one summoning spell which has worked in the last 300 years, and that is lost with Norrland Strange. Even if they have managed to pull together an efficient spell, there is the particular impossibility of Usglass's name."
Childermas went on in this way for some time, and it led to such a stimulating discussion that Segundus soon forgot all about his displeasure at the news, and only looked forward to Childermas's return so that he might hear the rest of the tale.
"I will leave Vinculus with you, sir, if you do not mind. I know you were enjoying working on the letters, and I will travel quickest alone to return in time for the meeting with the young gentleman. He gave a wry smile. If I travel with Vinculus, we are obliged to stop at every inn and society we pass, which does slow down progress, and although I'm sure he would be of interest, he is unnecessary for the business. Oh, of course, Segundus cried, simultaneously cheered and worried by the news. I shall warn Mrs. White and invite Mr. Honeyfoot, and perhaps Miss Redruth, with her father, of course. She seldom gets the opportunity to investigate Vinculus at close quarters. Childermas met his eyes briefly and gave a huffed laugh, and Segundus knew that he had heard his true meaning. It is unusual that Miss Redruth has the opportunity to investigate Vinculus in peace without the scandalized mutters and whispers of Dr. Foxcastle and his cronies bearing down upon her. His mood lifted a little at such a smile, such a conspiratorial look. At that moment, Charles entered and handed a letter to Childermas, giving a quiet apology for interrupting. Childermas gave the young man an amused look as he took the envelope, frowning at the writing on the front, and opened it roughly. Before starting to read, he passed his newspaper to Segundus. "Apologies, sir. Do take this to amuse yourself while you finish your breakfast. I must see to this." He nodded sternly at Segundus and turned back to scowling at his letter. Segundus poured himself another cup of tea and sat to reading the paper. He did not often look into a newspaper. They seldom made their way to Staircross until several weeks after the events related had transpired, unless he happened to have a visitor, such as Mr. Childermas or Mr. Honeyfoot, and it was very seldom indeed that he got his hands on a London paper like this one. Lately, he had begun to notice that on the occasions a paper did make its way to Staircross, he had already heard the pertinent information in letters from Childermas or Mrs. Lennox, usually with more detail and less speculation, and written with a drier sense of humor. He settled into this, not even a week old, with interest. It was not until Childermas stood with an exclamation of surprise that Segundus realized he had dropped his teacup. Indeed, it took a little more than a minute for Childermas's actions to filter through the sudden noise in his head, and for the world to widen further than a single paragraph in the newspaper. "Sir, are you all right?" Childermas was asking at his side. He crouched, and the movement was enough to tear Segundus's eyes from the paper. I must... He could not find his words, nor his voice. He raised himself to his feet slowly, worried that his knees would not bear his weight, and realized that his hands were shaking. "I am sorry, Mr. Childermas," he said in a rush, and left the room, only distantly aware of the crunch of china beneath his shoe. His head was aching, and the pressure behind his eyes was burning. He did not want Childermas to see him with tears in his eyes, did not want him to know how distressed he was. He most certainly did not want him to know what had caused it. When he reached his study, he shut the door behind him and collapsed into his chair. He had left the newspaper in the morning room, but the paragraph was imprinted on the back of his eyes. He had always thought it barbaric and indefensible, that intrusion of the law into the private affairs of men, but at this very moment he could have screamed at the injustice of it. He was hollow and choking, as if someone had scraped out his guts and packed them all back into his throat. He shut his eyes tightly, but still the tears spilled hot over his cheeks. He could not believe it. He saw the words floating on his eyelids, the name and the damning accusations and their consequences. William Morpeth, 42. Late a barrister. Unnatural crime. Executed yesterday. He stifled a sob with his hand. His mind filled with a vision of a shining golden boy laughing against the warm stone of an Oxford summer. Of an elegant man smiling broadly over a glass of port. He thought of the letters they had exchanged, almost daily at first, but reduced to one or two a year as time and life distanced them from each other, from the youth they had shared, of the blooming of his heart at every recognition of the hand upon the envelope. Segundus's heart now felt as brittle as the cup he had broken that morning, and that the slightest bump would shatter it entirely. He couldn't understand it. Even with the audacity of youth, William had been careful in his partners and his desires. For him to be caught out so many years past those rash days made little sense to Segundus. He had last met with him a little under 5 years ago, but now his fractured heart ached with regret that they had not met more recently, that time had borne them so far from each other. To speak unguardedly, truly unguardedly, with a friend, to hear his hopes and his fears... The ache in his chest boiled over. He gasped for air. A knock came at the door, startling him from his reverie, and he hastily pulled a handkerchief from his pocket and dried his eyes and face. "Come in," he said, all too aware of the painful crack of his voice.
The door opened slowly and closed again quietly, and Childermas was in the room. He took the seat across the desk from Segundus and regarded him carefully.
"I wanted to check on you, sir. You seemed upset and have been gone over half an hour."
Childermas's tone was that of one trying to soothe a startled horse, and his wary gaze never lifted from Segundus's countenance. Segundus felt the weight of it bearing down on his fracture lines and kept his own eyes on the worn corner of his desk. He might have been irritated by the tone had he not been expending all his energy in keeping himself from shaking apart.
"It is just that I have read some distressing news."
Segundus did not quite make it to the end of the sentence, his voice breaking and fresh tears spilling from his eyes. He cursed his own fragility, cursed Childermas's dark eyes upon him, as he brought the handkerchief once more to his eyes. "A friend?" Childermas asked, careful. Segundus realized his own stupidity in leaving the paper on the table, flinched at Childermas's words and the implication. Childermas was a clever man, cleverer than any Segundus knew, and would, of course, have looked at the page it had been left open at when Segundus had fled so suddenly. Williams had been the only named execution listed on the page, among a swath of pillories and transportations, and it would not have taken much for Childermas to attribute Segundus's distress to the death and from there speculate on Segundus himself. He wanted very much to deny it, but his nerves were so wrung out that he merely nodded, turning his face away. Childermas said nothing, but let out a great, heavy breath. When Segundus looked up, he saw the thin line of his mouth and the frown on his brow. Segundus closed his eyes so he would not have to see his disapproval.
"I am sorry, sir." Childermas's voice was low when he finally spoke. "It is a horrible thing to find out the fate of a friend through such a means."
Segundus looked up at him in surprise. His mouth was twisted in a sad sort of smile, wryness clinging to it seemingly more out of habit than any intention. There was nothing of the empty condolence in Childermas's manner. His dark eyes were heavy with understanding when Segundus managed to meet them for the slightest moment. Under the weight of his grief as he was, the sight of that understanding, if understanding it was, if Segundus's disordered mind had not planted something he merely wished to see, did something to ease the burden.
"In truth, I had not seen him in many years," Segundus said, and found himself able to breathe a little more easily.
Childermas slid a glass of water over to him, which Segundus had not noticed him bring in. He drank from it gratefully, although it passed painfully around the lump in his throat.
"But we were great friends at Oxford."
"Friendships formed in youth are of a different sort to those we begin in adulthood," Childermas said. "However cropped the growth might be, the roots run deep." His tone did not hint at any disgust or suspicion, so Segundus chanced to look at him.
"I suppose I do not understand it."
Segundus sighed and looked at his fingers as they wrapped around the glass.
"There are many who do not."
Childermas's words, the sudden sharpening of his tone, had the immediate effect of seizing Segundus's joints and stiffening his back. His teeth came together in a clench that made his jaw ache. He had clutched at the very barest sign of comfort, he cursed himself, had let himself think in a vulnerable moment that why the law should interfere in private matters in such a way I've never understood, and certainly not with such mortal consequences. Segundus was so relieved by this sentiment that he laughed. It was a laugh that caught on something hot and sharp in his chest, and turned into a sob by the time it left his mouth, bringing with it a fresh wave of tears. He brought his handkerchief to his mouth to stifle the sound, and closed his eyes. The scrape of a chair on the floorboards alerted him to Childermas standing, and a warm hand landed gentle on his shoulder a moment later. "I will ring for some tea in the morning room, and bring it to you that no one else will see you so," said Childermas. "Then you may know whether you would like my company, or if you prefer to be alone in your grief."
"Thank you, Mr. Childermas," Segundus said, his voice wavering only a little.
"Thank you." He didn't dare open his eyes, but he brought his hand up to squeeze briefly at Childermas's on his shoulder. The contact was withdrawn slowly, and the door closed softly behind him. Segundus doubled over in his chair and pressed his hands to his face. By the time the door opened softly again, he had worn himself out. His ribs ached and his eyes stung, his head felt stuffed full of down. He felt as if he had been stripped of his skin, shivering with all nerves exposed. He pressed his hands against his eyes, trying to relieve the pressure in them, before looking to Childermas.
"Thank you," he said, voice thick as he swallowed around the jagged thing lodged in his throat. You have been too kind. Childemas made a noncommittal noise in his throat and continued to pour the tea. He handed Segundus the cup with a gruff, "Get that down you," and sat on the other side of the desk. The warmth of the cup in his hands was almost as soothing as the drinking of it, and he sat for some time in silence, his fingers wrapped around the heat. He closed his eyes and took a long, deep breath. As he let it out, he felt some of the tension leave him. Childemas did not speak, but Segundus could feel his quietly assessing eyes on him. "It is the strangest thing," he said, once he had taken a sip of the surprisingly sweet tea, once his throat felt like less of an obstacle. "I cannot decide. I have no idea whether I should write to his wife." He laughed a little, feeling it bubbling in his chest a little hysterically. "I feel I should, but also it seems rather inappropriate given the nature of things." His eyes started leaking again, and he pressed his by now rather sodden handkerchief to them. "Did she know?" Childemas asked, offering him a clean handkerchief. "About his inclinations?" He said it in such a simple way that Segundus could almost believe that they were talking about something else entirely, like William's taste in curtains. Despite the exhaustion and numbness in his nerves and the wooliness of his mind, his gut tightened at this being spoken aloud. Spoken aloud, and by John Childemas. Had this happened 6 months ago, Segundus would have been in fear of his livelihood, of the value of the knowledge he had inadvertently given this man who had more than once been the architect of Segundus's disappointments. Yet the sick feeling in his stomach passed, or at least lessened, as he regarded Childemas, leaning over the desk from his chair with a clean handkerchief proffered between two fingers, his brows drawn together in solemnity, and his eyes full of some expression that Segundus could not bring himself to define. "I do not know." Segundus shrugged and gratefully accepted the handkerchief. "I met her only once, at the wedding. He never mentioned it in his letters, but I would not have expected him to." "We did not mention such things in letters." "I would not have wanted you to intercept them," he thought, and when he managed to glance at Childemas, he saw the same reflection he had noticed that morning, this time without the smile, but Segundus knew he had understood. They sat in silence a little longer, the mantel clock marking off the seconds and the minutes like a heartbeat. Childemas poured him some more tea, sat back to regard him with heavy eyes. Segundus felt he couldn't bear a moment more of the scrutiny, but another part of him was glad of the steady, quiet company, and found the weight of his gaze almost reassuring. In that gaze was not the accusation Segundus had imagined, not the calculating stare he had steeled himself for, but something almost like recognition. It was an expression that should have shaken Segundus, should have put him on guard, but he felt some mirror of it in himself. "I am sorry, Mr. Childemas," he said after some minutes, finally looking up to meet Childemas's eye. "You were making your preparations to leave, and instead here you are pouring a silly little man some tea." "Don't," Childemas said, voice suddenly firm and eyes fierce. "You've every right to grieve for a friend, Mr. Segundus. I'm only sorry I didn't know him, that I could give a little more comfort." Segundus opened his mouth to say that he was already a great comfort, but the words stuck to the roof of his mouth, and he only said, "Thank you." "Besides," Childemas said with a shrug, "the Sheffield business is not urgent. They will fail, and will only miss a lecture, which they can easily hear another time. I will stay, and we will work on the letters. Vinculus will not complain." This made Segundus laugh, a sad, wet sound that took a little of the ache with it. Segundus looked at him once more, managed some moments looking together, and found that even that clinging residue of wryness had disappeared from Childemas's countenance. He now looked solemn and fierce, and Segundus was more glad than he could have ever predicted to have him there. "Thank you, Mr. Childemas," he said, his voice feeling stronger. He swallowed and felt the sharp edges in his throat somewhat softened. "I will invite Miss Redruth. I'm sure she will be glad of the opportunity." He reached for some paper and a pen, and Childemas got to his feet. He said nothing, just pulled his solemn expression into a solemn smile and left the room, but not without dropping his hand once more to Segundus's shoulder, a firm, fleeting reassurance.